So we, after break, we're going to continue our evolutionary studies. We looked at the evolution of Safe Drinking Water Act and some of the programs. We'll change track just a little bit and now look at the evolution of some of the tools and resources that have also changed over time to keep up with all the other advances. So to talk about the County Geologic Atlas, which is a really foundational tool for a lot of the groundwater and geology work in Minnesota, have two very distinguished speakers, Tony Runkle from USGS and Paul Putzier, recently retired from the DNR. And they're going to walk us through the evolution of the County Geologic Atlas, a much beloved tool for all of us in Minnesota. Most of us have grown up with that. But now we get to see the inside story of how the County Atlas program came to be and how it has changed and kept pace with the times. So, Tony, going to go first, and then now we'll be followed by Paul.
Well, thank you, Sandeep. You had one minor tweak there that I need to correct. You said I'm from the USGS. I'm actually from the Minnesota Geological Survey. And I want to bring that up because before I begin with what I'm supposed to talk about, I want to mention that I am interim director. And the reason I am saying that is we hope to have a real director in place by next spring. And there's going to be a job ad for that posted very soon. And I'm guessing there are people in this room who would be qualified for that kind of position. And if you feel like you're not, if you know anyone who wants to be the next state geologist for Minnesota, please encourage them to apply because it's a very important position and we want to get somebody really good in place. So with that, now that I've finished my ad, I'll start in on what I'm supposed to talk about, and that is the County Atlas Program. As Sandeep mentioned, I'm co-presenting this with Paul Putzier, who's recently retired from the Minnesota DNR. My responsibilities are twofold. I am supposed to talk about what is a County Geologic Atlas, or CGA as we refer to them, how are they used, the history of the CGAs going back to about 1982, major advances in the geologic portions of the CGAs, and then a slide in which I'm going to have a few bullet points on what's coming next or what do we think might come next for the CGA program. My second main responsibility is to try to prevent myself from going off the rails and babbling, which I frequently do during talks, so that Paul has enough time to present his awesome material following me here. So let's get started. What are County Geologic Atlas? Well, they're County Geologic Atlases are sets of maps and reports. And the basic idea is the maps show the distribution of rock, sediment, and groundwater in a county. The information is critical to predict, plan, and protect Minnesota's natural resources. This is a groundwater conference, and I think most users, I know most users these days are using them for the groundwater relevance that they have. And I believe pretty firmly that most of the funding for these CGAs is also because of their usefulness in protecting groundwater resources. But that said, they are one-stop shops. And what I mean by that is they can include basic geologic maps that help manage mineral resources and aggregate resources and that kind of thing. So they are truly multi-purpose. How do county geologic atlases help us protect groundwater? The atlases started in 1982 and they're going still today, so that's about a 40-year span. I picked an example here for Goodhue County, Minnesota, which is southeast Minnesota, that's kind of right in the midway of the history of the atlases, so it's produced about late 1990s to the early 2000s. It shows how we kind of divide things up into a Part A and a Part B. The Part A is on the left. That's handled by the Minnesota Geological Survey. What I'm showing here is a very simplified geologic map. They're actually much more complex, but it distills things down into brown, which is clay-rich rock, mostly glacial tills, and blue, which is karstic carbonate rock, and yellow, which is sand. A lot of groundwater people here, so I probably don't have to say this, but I'm going to anyway. Sand and karstic carbonate rock, would be areas where surface water can infiltrate very rapidly into the groundwater, whereas a clay-rich near-surface material would impede vertical infiltration at high rates. And that kind of information then is used in part for the map you're seeing on the right, which is produced by the Minnesota DNR, which is a groundwater pollution sensitivity map. This particular map is pollution sensitivity of the uppermost bedrock aquifers. And you can see the correspondence. What jumps out probably the greatest is if you look at the deepest reds on the pollution sensitivity map, that corresponds to the areas where there's sand and karstic carbonate rock. Okay, and that's just one of many examples how Part A and Part B kind of go together. And of course, the maps also try, or the county geologic atlases do go into the subsurface. And here in the year 2000 type of style, where we focused only on cross sections, this kind of shows what's going on beneath the land surface, where the groundwater is more sensitive to contamination, which would be on the right in this cross-section. You can see kind of a light purple color and a label indicating that that's younger water locally with higher nitrate. The age of the water and that kind of thing is probably something Paul's going to get more into, but that is a big advancement with the Part Bs that was made around these times, where they sampled and analyzed for things like tritium to get an idea of the water age. In contrast, where there's generally, on the left here, generally continuous clay cover and an upper bedrock aquitard, the water is much older because infiltration is slower from the land surface and the water is unimpacted by anthropogenic activities. Okay, again, how do the county atlases help protect groundwater? Before I briefly describe this slide, I'll mention Lanya's talk and Bob Tipping's talk, which preceded mine. Bob Tipping talked about dwismas. Well, the dwismas, in relation to the dwismas, he showed a geologic, 3D geologic model of the conditions in the Zumbro River watershed and how important that was to manage dwismas. That's county atlas mapping that Bob is using there. It was stitched together, but that's county atlas mapping. With Lanya, she showed some pollution sensitivity maps, or generally pollution sensitivity across the Twin Cities metro area. That's also based heavily on county geologic atlases. In this particular example I'm showing here, it's from the 2019 Minnesota's Groundwater Protection Rule, which identifies, quote, vulnerable areas susceptible to ag contamination, and it limits the use of nitrogen fertilizer in those areas. So just reemphasizing again here that these vulnerable areas are essentially based on geologic mapping, and much of that mapping is from the county atlas, county geologic atlas program. So these things do get used. It's we're really proud to say that. Now I'm going to back up and go through the history of the CGA program. In my view, before the CGAs were even conceived, something that's important is that the Minnesota Geological Survey from the late 60s into the early 1970s transitioned from an organization that really was quite small and really hard rock dominated. What I mean by that is people who worked on Precambrian geology with little relevance to water. Matt Walton arrived. And by 1980, he and Bruce Olson, who's already spoke here today, came up with the idea of initiating the CGA program. Again, not entirely for water, but for sure including components that could help us manage our water resources. The first CGA was 1982, Scott County, traditional paper maps. I'll talk about that in a minute. And early CGAs required some of them required partial county funding, okay? One thing Paul will talk about following me is that the hydrogeologic content was moved from MGS to DNR in the 1990s, okay? And a really big, I think a really big highlight, if you will, or key part of the history of the CGA program is that we were only going at a pace of about one CGA a year up until the early 2000s. There's 87 Minnesota counties. That means it would have taken nearly 90 years to complete CGAs across all of Minnesota. This was greatly accelerated in the mid-2000s under the management of Dale Setterholm, who I was hoping would be here and is in good health. I don't know why he's not here. And Jan Faltasek, who I know has signed up and I believe is sitting out here somewhere in the audience. So Jan is here. Kudos to Dale and Jan. And that's a result largely of Environmental Natural Resources Trust Fund money as well as the clean water money, which has significantly ramped up the speed at which we're working. Okay, and last, as another, I think, really huge step in the atlases is when we were able to go to digital 3D GIS data, which really occurred over a large number of years, so it's hard to pin that down. So I'm going back to kind of the really early efforts, and what I see as important milestones is the development of the County Well Index, which I've been told by consultants who work outside of Minnesota is one of, if not the best, water well index in the United States. And without it, we couldn't make our subsurface maps. And credit goes to Bruce Olson here again, Bruce Blumgren, who's not here, Tim Wall, who's also not retired, and then they work collaboratively with health department people. And then for taking that kind of information and figuring out a way, working with geologists together with GIS, more skilled kind of IT people. The people who got that off the ground at the Minnesota Geological Survey were Bob Tipping, who you already heard speak, and Gary Meyer, and they did an awesome job with it. And we have improved methods now, but it's all basically, it's essentially based on what Bob and Gary developed. So now let's take a quick look at the first CGA, 1982 Scott County Geologic Atlas. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. It contained most of the components of a modern atlas, but the key thing is that it was all paper, okay? No electronic databases. Subsurface was represented by 2D cross sections and only a few of those in a county. That's all you'd get for a subsurface depiction. The hydrogeology included only potentiometric and transmissivity maps. No third dimension, essentially, and very limited water chemistry. And I think when Paul speaks, you'll see how far the Part B has come from those very primitive maps. So we went from paper maps to digital over the years. So this would be 34 years after the Scott County Geologic Atlas, 2016, Washington County Geologic Atlas, and I love pushing buttons, so I'm going to push a whole bunch of them here. First, look at the database, right? These are all the well sticks that basically started from the CWI program, coded or color-coded for lithology. So that's the basis for our subsurface mapping, and it allows us to map the base of the aquifer system electronically with surfaces, top of the Mount Simon, top of the Wonewoc, Tunnel City, Jordan, top of Bedrock, and then really complex quaternary deposits. The green will be the low permeability tills, the sand and gravel, the higher permeability aquifers, and I have to click about 20 buttons to get us through all of these fabulously mapped till units, and I went a little bit too far. But I think that's very impressive, and of course, it's what you need for something like groundwater modeling. And also for modeling, you need ancillary information like hydraulic conductivity, and you need potentiometric surfaces. Water chemistry data can be useful as well. And it has been used. You know, 2016 isn't that long ago. It was heavily used in the efforts of the MPCA and the DNR and the consultants they hired, AECOM in this case, to model, for instance, PFAS transport in the East Metro area. So again, something we're really proud of, that how fundamentally useful for these are to set up the framework for groundwater modeling, which is really important. Another advance, we've really changed our view on the inclusion or exclusion of the lands of tribal nations in all of our mapping at MGS, including the county geologic atlases. We didn't have a proper perspective 5 years ago until the Grand Portage Tribe came to us when we told them that we were going to do an atlas for Cook County, And we got a response that said, we're well aware of the ATLAS program. We value it highly in its ability to protect Minnesota's groundwater, but we are opting out and we want our reservation to be blank because we don't want public information on our natural resource. We don't want our natural resources to information on our natural resources to be available to the public. We'll handle our land on our own. And so we respect that now. And where we're at with regard to CGA and other mapping is seven of the 11 tribes have opted in to participate with mapping of tribal lands, and four tribes have opted out, and we respect that by blanking out all of those lands on any of our maps. My last slide here, where are we going with the CGA Part A's? We're moving along. Only 10 counties are not yet in the queue. We have 51 completed, 26 underway. We've never been this busy mapping so many counties at one time. And so what do we want to do in the future? Well, we want to finish, right? That's given how many we have active right now and that there's 10 more after that. We're looking at about 10 years out. We want to update CGAs for some counties that have paper maps, essentially only paper maps, if the counties are amenable to it. We want improved 3D maps. The quat deposits have been particularly vexing to kind of handle, even though those Washington County slides look pretty. There are some issues with those electronic surfaces that we need to clean up. And then I think eventually we're going to go the way of seamless 3D watershed scale geologic maps, or maybe even statewide seamless, if we can achieve that at these kinds of detailed scales. And then we also want to make the atlases more accessible and user-friendly, things like mobile apps, story maps, YouTube tutorials, of which I am completely ignorant. And then we're always looking for suggestions from anyone, the users of these maps, people in this room, on how we can improve county geologic atlases. So thank you, and Paul, you're up next.
Hello, good to see everybody. So I was gonna ask to touch on some of the evolutionary changes in the Groundwater Atlas program. Because I have gone fishing, I am taking notes today from anybody who has recommendations. I already wrote one down from Sandeep. I think it was never drink alone. I got to remember that. I'm having trouble with that already. Some of the best stories that I learned along the way the last couple of weeks preparing this are going to be have to be saved for a tell-all book that we're going to put together sometime, something like Water Witches, Hydrogeologists, and the Secret Subterranean Universe, or something like that. But let me just pass through here. Try to advance. So one of the things is the Minnesota Water Sustainability Framework, another document. I loved a lot of the stuff Lanya presented. But this, I think, also in 2001 was published, which really continues to give a lot of impetus to the people that are funding our work as they consider this. Let's see if I can advance here. So in that framework, the very first recommendation, they said develop a long-term robust program, this went to the legislature, that includes the necessary mapping and monitoring to manage water sustainability and proactively. So we keep going back to that, and I keep going back to that when I'm talking to people at the Capitol. And then the very first action plan in that section, in the first section, was the completion of a county geological atlases by the survey and DNR should be accelerated. So they're still pushing for faster work. I don't know that we've achieved that, but and secondly, aquifer characterization mapping by the DNR should be accelerated at the same rate as the geologic atlases. And that's really provided a nice fundamental policy goal for the funding of our program. So with that, I just want to go through a couple of the evolutionary steps. I'm not going to take you through all the parts of the atlas today. I think most of you know about these things. So one of the places it's obvious that we've changed over the last 20 or 30 years is the evolution of geochemistry or just water chemistry and how we do it. In the atlas, we usually, for the groundwater atlas, we sample about 90 wells in each county. It seems like a small number. But that data is valuable, and it helps us understand the flow regimes and some of the broader characteristics of the aquifer systems. If you have 20 different aquifers or more in a county, it's a little bit limiting. But one of the key changes was that for years, and I think some of you can remember this, all of this data for each county existed on some hydrogeologist's laptop or his PC in his cube. And that's where it was. That didn't work very well. For a while, we moved it out so that it was served out, but that didn't work very well. So over the last, 10 years or more, Todd Peterson, I think Todd's here today, really led this years-long effort to get these databases off the individual PCs and into one database. And then more recently, we joined MPCA, MDA, Dakota County, and others, adding our stuff to the Equus database, excuse me, which is a statewide data set. One of the things with that is that we have 50 counties where the information has now been sampled and is being served out in this way, about 50 counties. And so every year that we finish another several counties, that data set just gets more and more valuable. And we constantly are getting requests for data, this county, this set of chemical parameters, or these several counties, these sets of chemical parameters. And we're able to push that out. Let me continue here. Also, another thing that's happened, I'm calling it the evolution of the sample plans. This is really just starting to happen. For many years, we were kind of stuck on the 90 samples per county, plus maybe 10 surface water samples to help us understand those interactions. You can see the difference in the size of these counties. We have Hennepin, Ottertail out in the west, and then, of course, St. Louis County. And the people in the Atlas program just finished sampling in Ottertail and St. Louis in the last year or so. And we made the decision to go back to our funding source. We work under a work plan with the LCCMR that's very specific. And we said we need to have more flexibility in our sample plans to address counties that have a lot more surface water or just a lot more geography. So both of these counties, St. Louis County and Ottertail, we doubled the number of samples all the way around, just generally speaking, so that we thought we could come up with a better atlas in the end. Shooting for 11. This was touched on earlier by Steve, but this idea of the tritium is an important element in our work in understanding the flow regimes of the groundwater systems in each county that we finish as well. And this just simply shows you how we have these cutoffs between modern and pre-modern. It's a little more complicated than that, and mixed, the different colors on this graph. But you can see over time from the 1950s up through 2020, how this diminution of the tritium in the background is affecting where we call these cutoffs. Well, it's gotten to the point where it's really we needed to do something substantial. And so Todd Peterson, again, working with MDH, with Jim Walsh and some of those guys at the health department, just took a fresh look at all of it and came up with a new sample, a new way to deal with the tritium results that we have addressing this reducing tritium signal in the environment. There's a really good paper, 2020 paper, that you could look at that really addresses that. But we're faced with some problems in the future, and we're going to have to address those as we go forward. The detection limit now for the standard runs is about 0.8, and you can see on that chart that we're falling below that. That's that red line. That's our standard samples. That's about $150. If we go to the ultra-low tritium analysis, the enriched, it's about 500, just rough numbers. So it's about three times as much, but it drops to about 0.1 tritium units for detection level. And that, you can see in that most recent end of that diagram, would give us a little more differentiation between some important parts of the groundwater regime. So we've been experimenting, or the Atlas people, I'm trying not to say we since I don't belong there anymore, but the Atlas program is working on that. We've done quite a bit of sampling with ultra-low, convincing people to pay for that. We used some clean water money for that to understand if that was going to be advantageous. I think decisions will be made in the future about that. Well, that's chemistry. I'm going to go to pollution sensitivity, especially talking about buried aquifer, sand aquifer systems. That's not what this map shows, but it's a nice background map. So this program started, as I understand it, the pollution sensitivity mapping is an important goal of the Groundwater Atlas. From the very beginning, the legislature asked the DNR to do this part of the analysis, the pollution sensitivity. So early on, I understand they did what they called, even before DNR was involved, a factor analysis. And no one's really been able to explain that to me. I can kind of visualize it if I close my eyes, looking at different factors, what the pollution sensitivity might be in a particular area. Then we advanced as we got into a more robust GIS system. We're able to map some of these sand bodies, the buried sand aquifers, more discreetly in the subsurface, and we came up with a program that I understand was called the recharge surface method for determining pollution sensitivity. And the person who did that sat down and explained it to me for about a half an hour. I didn't understand any of it, so that would be hard to explain to the legislature or anybody else. Not that I'm that smart, but so finally, I think in about 2016, right about the time I started in the Atlas program, Vanessa Barada, I think she's here, came up with a new idea for these buried sand aquifers, which is all the colored little sand bodies. The grays are tills in this cross-section, typical cross-section, and the colored represent the different tritium ages. And so she came up with this, what we call a cumulative fine-grained material analysis, and it makes sense. All you do with GIS is add up the fine-grained thicknesses above any particular sand body, and then you apply some basic hydrogeologic parameters or characteristics to those clays, those tills, and you come up with a flow rate down. So how long does it take water that hits the surface to get down to that lowermost sand body? It needs work, but the model that we use, and we test it with a lot of our chemistry, works pretty well in most cases, and it's a good starting point. Oh, I forgot. John Barry will have to tell me if this is right, but I think we went back to a factor analysis for the Winona Groundwater Atlas. Would you call it that, John? A factor analysis for pollution sensitivity? Because there is no cumulative fine-grained material to add up in southeast Minnesota. So John was thrown to the wolves and had to sort of come up with something a little different. We're facing that in northeast Minnesota as well. Now I just want to touch on some, let's go back here. We've done a lot to make the Groundwater Atlas more user-friendly and tried to respond to some of the comments we've gotten through the years. So I'm just going to touch on some of those in a more general sort of miscellaneous way here. The website's been completely reworked, and this is important, actually. It was really a mess, and we had so many pages and links and junk in there that you just couldn't find what you wanted. And so the production team, which was our technical editor and our GIS specialist, really worked hard to just go in and clean it up. And this was a lot of work, but I really hope that people find it more accessible now if you ever get in and out of there. In 2016, we published the first Groundwater Atlas in a report format. So I didn't bring one with me, but we used to publish them just as large plates, as big as the tables you're sitting at. A little harder to work with. They were good. They were also hard to make consistent between counties. So we started that in every atlas since 2016, since this was Blue Earth down around Mankato. Has been done in a report format. Also, this year, the Becker County Groundwater Atlas is available as print on demand only. So we've stopped printing hundreds of paper copies. And now, if you really want a paper copy, you go to an outside contractor that we have an arrangement with called Ocean Graphics, and you can order it. And it'll come to you looking very similar to what you would get as a paper copy now. That was a big step for us, too, to get away from printing so many. Hydrographs, because the DNR's observation well network has really become so much more robust, I'm sorry I'm talking so fast, I realize that I am, we're able to, in many of these counties, look at some long-term hydrographs, which are meaningful and might help tell the story of the groundwater resources in that county. We don't always use hydrographs in the atlases, only when they can add something to the story important about pumping, climate, those kind of things. So you'll see those popping up more in our county atlases. Climate, we just started doing this. This was something I was pushing for, and a lot of the scientists in our group weren't that excited about it because we do include some forecasting. But we turned to our climatology people to say, for Becker County, what can you tell us about what you know about precipitation, winters, temperatures, and what is it going to look like in the coming decades? And so that's a little bit sort of off topic for us to go into the future, but we feel like it's important because of the connections between changing climate and potential connections. This is exactly what Lanya was talking about in thinking today about what might be happening in the future. I can't remember what I had for this slide. Let me see if I have any notes on it. Whoops. Oh, just about getting our process more streamlined. I'm going to blast past that. And finally, on this part of the presentation, we've kind of did a little bit of rebranding. We are still the Part B of the County Atlas series, but we've been highlighting our product more as the Groundwater Atlas because I found a lot of confusion, especially at the Capitol and other places where it was important in them understanding, I don't get what a Part B or a Part A or are you geology or are you groundwater? So you'll see that this has been rebranded a little bit. Almost done here. Applications and uses. I love this part. We spent a lot of time over the last number of years asking people how they use the Atlas. I have a whole bunch of testimonials. I'll leave some up here in case you're wondering. I'm not going to go into all the details, but we find some really unique applications of the Atlas by all these groups, all the people listed on this slide I've heard from and told me how they use the Geologic Atlas and or the Groundwater Atlas. The background on this slide is the Washington County SSTS, the Subsurface Treatment Sewage Treatment System Risk Assessment Tool. So the county developed an online tool that uses the pollution sensitivity mapping from the Groundwater Atlas as a way for them to understand the risk for subsurface treatment systems as they were trying to approach those. It's a neat system. The future, all right. Complete an atlas for every county, complete an atlas for every county, complete an atlas for every county. We have a lot of shiny objects that come into our group that we like to do besides atlases, but they take us away from the main job. And we got to keep the funding going. I would hate to see it be just sort of a metro-centric kind of a completion of these things. We really have to get out and finish them for Kitson County and the counties in the far west, because now we're understanding, and we always kind of knew, that that's where some of the pressure points in our groundwater resource use are out in these western areas. So we have to keep going. Integrate texture into our pollution sensitivity modeling for those cumulative fine grain analysis. We don't really have a good way right now, we haven't, to include more specific texture analysis in those sensitivity models. That'll really help. Direct public access to the chemistry database, so map-based, click on it, go on there, click on a county, click on two counties, click on three, click on the parameters you want, nitrate, chloride, whatever it is, and have it served out. Better county-to-county border matches, we have a big problem with this. We inherit some of it from our friends over in Minneapolis, but we have our own issues, so when a county's done, trying to get it so that it matches up with the county next to it. Tritium and new residence time indicators, PFAS, neonicotinoids. We did a bunch of sampling with the university to see if those might. We know when they started entering the environment to see if they were helpful. Sustainability evaluation. Everybody wants this. It's going to be hard to do at the county scale and in our program, but the first thing the county commissioners ask you when you stand in front of them is, do we have enough water in our county? Well, it kind of depends. Get the word out about the atlases and plan for future funding. So thank you, Vanessa, Jim, Nick, Jan, and Dale.
Thank you.
Where's Tony? The hardest question to Tony gets a free book from Greg Brick, Wisconsin Underground. Sorry, Tony. Is he gone? Uh-oh.
We'll see who can fill in for Tony, but we got time for a couple questions, and Tony can be surely found over lunch if he can't get those questions answered. Oh, but Tony is still here.
Thank you, Paul and Tony. I was just a bit curious of what the funding looks like for the county atlases after all of them are finished. I think Tony said in the next 10 years, what does funding look like to maintain?
Well, we'll have to find a completely new funding source. I don't think the Environmental Natural Resource Trust Fund, which is about 70% of our funding, will continue except for on project specifics. I've been telling the people that I think the counties, if they want an updated atlas or something new, that they're going to have to find it in their budgets mostly to do some of those kind of analysis. But
hey, over here. I have a question regarding how we approach the continuity of protective materials over aquifers and how we address the density, the spatial density of the data that we have. For example, is there anything in the future with regards to looking at the CWI data about materials in a well log? Say you have a till at one location, what's the chances of the continuity of that till to another well log? How do we address that? And then how do we communicate the uncertainty of that larger distance, possibly, to other people and to your product? Is that too much?
I don't think it's too much, but I don't know how to do it. I would, if I had that question while I was at work, I'd say, let me call Bob Tipping for a minute and talk to him. Bob can correct me if I'm wrong, but he's done that for sands, coming up with whatever it is, 2 kilometer. From any given well, the odds are, on average, it extends 2 kilometers for all, using all Minnesota data. I would think the same thing could be done with tills. And actually, maybe it wouldn't be that difficult. When I said I can't do it, it's because I can't do math and statistics and all those important things. No, I can't. But there are people like your friend Randall Barnes who can get master's students on that kind of thing. Yeah. No, I know Randall as well, but he just had a student doing not precisely that topic, but taking all of CWI and recalculating hydraulic connectivity across the state based on specific capacity tests. So, right. No, I think it's a good idea for improvement.